What's up, everyone? Welcome to the first edition of 2022 for Hiring University. I'm your host, John Beck. Today, we welcome Adam Nicholson, the Vice President of Product Development at AgileOne. But prior to AgileOne, Adam held every position one can imagine within the MSP and VMS world, including Head of Contingent Labor at Gilead Sciences, VP of Professional Services at the formerly known Zero Chaos, VP of Implementations at Adecco, and a number to name a few, including his own consulting practice. 20 years within staffing. We're lucky to have him on the show today. Adam, welcome to Hiring U.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. Good to see you again.
Adam, before we break down or even try to solve some of the staffing world's challenges, give us a little sketch of your work today at AgileOne and your role. And what are you building these days? I know you're building stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. As Vice President of Product Management, we are working on what I'm hoping will be the next disruptive technologies in the industry. So a big piece of what I'm doing and my team in general are doing are looking at what's out there today, what do we have currently, where could we be going, and what's the best way to do that. That's really where my main focus is now. So I was running the implementation team for the first 2 years that I've been with AgileOne, and now I am running product management, and we're looking at all the various technologies and trying to consolidate as best we can. We want to look at our VMS, and we want to be a disruptor in the industry. We really want to rethink how we do these things. Everything from as simple as how we log in to entering a rec, to how we invoice, to how you get reports, how people get into the system. We're rethinking every aspect of it.
You've used the word disruption a couple times, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. There's so much money being poured into the human capital management space through investment and M&A, Vindaloo being the latest example of the acquisition by Workday. Without giving away any trade secrets, is part of your exercise also, though, to really innovate as part of that disruption? And I guess I ask the question because I see a lot of people building better versions or better mousetraps, which a lot of that is necessary because a lot of the tools are antiquated. But I don't see a lot of innovation that's changing the industry. And as I say that, obviously AI would be the first thing that most people would comment on. And I appreciate some of that. But where in your mind do you see some of the opportunities and where's that white space?
Yeah, and I'm glad you asked that question because, yes, innovation is definitely part of it. And I agree with you, too, that when you look at all of the VMSs in the market today, we all essentially do exactly the same thing. And it really comes down to look and feel, and we become sort of commoditized. So when we talk about innovation, it really is every aspect of the VMS has an opportunity to be innovated on. So if you think about requisitions, for example, there's usually 10 to 15 fields that must be filled out. They're all your basic information, who's the hiring manager, department, location, job title, those types of things. So if we could default as much of that as possible, reduce the amount of actual data entry needed, then that's something that we can do that would be disruptive. But even more so is when you get into that artificial intelligence and machine learning is where you start saying, here's a great form for how you can enter a rec. But even smarter than that, what if our VMS told you what you needed before you even knew you needed it? So, hey, by the way, we noticed you hired 15 project managers every year in July for the last 5 years in a row. It's now June. Would you like us to place a rec for you for those project managers?
Yeah.
Right. It's those types of things. And then on top of that, one of the things that we talk with our clients a lot about is API layers and integrations, right? And today, every VMS that requires a whole project and all of that. So why not open up the API layers? Why not make it as self-serve as you can make it and make it as easy as possible to integrate with? Because all these different systems have to talk to each other. When you get into these larger clients, they get more and more complex. They've got different AP systems. They have HRIS systems. They've got provisioning systems, security systems, and everybody wants everything to talk to each other. And, you know, some really large clients, their onboarding and offboarding process is complex, labor intensive, you know, 20, 30, 40 steps to get somebody onboarded. And a lot of it requires manual rekeying of stuff. Why do that? Why not have all the systems talk to each other and flow that information down and have it as automated as you can possibly get it? So that when we think about what are we doing here? We're not here just to be a better form for you to fill out. So the tagline that I keep using as we're relooking at our system is let the system handle the tactical. We'll handle the strategy. You worry about the business. So that elevates the MSP. If you can get the VMS to a place where it's super user intuitive and it's doing a lot of the manual work that you're doing today, it's just doing it automatically, that now elevates and innovates the MSP to a level where the conversations become way more strategic and way more about total talent management. And then one last area that I'll say that's from an innovative perspective is the blurring of the lines of the systems. So they're, you know, in the past, vendor management systems sort of stood out on their own. HRIS systems kind of stood out on their own. Applicant tracking systems kind of stood out on their own. But why? Why not combine that? Why do they have to be all separate systems? Why couldn't they all be the same system? And I know there were super conservative thoughts about, oh, well, you have to have your contingent workforce data in a separate database. That thought has been well challenged over the last few years. And I would say that that's overly conservative. You can bring that back in. And there are ways of bifurcating data where it can be commingled in the same database, but still be separate. So
is the adoption of AI somewhat predicated on the continued adoption and implementation of APIs? And it's almost like which comes first, the chicken or the egg. And I look to our own business where we have an applicant tracking system. We're a Job Diva shop. We have 8 different systems that sit on top of the ATS and pull and push information. And as we add additional layers, the data becomes better. But isn't it somewhat predicated? If you can't get that multiple data and let the artificial intelligence do its work, it becomes less valuable. Is that a fair comment?
That is a fair comment. Yeah, the more data, the better the AI, right? So how do you get that data? It could be via an API where you're just pulling in pieces, or you can create what I call worker data hub, where you create a database where all, you know, your certain data pieces are pulled in and dumped into a central repository where the AI can then have access to that. Uh-huh. And that's actually more likely to happen because it's easier to integrate with that one system where a client has control from a security perspective as to the data objects pulled in and dumped there. And then the new system can come and look there versus, hey, I'm going to plug into 50 different systems, which most client security IT doesn't like, number one. Number two, you run the risk of hitting performance issues. You have too many APIs pulling too much data versus it's all been centrally, you know, deposited into one sort of bucket of data where you say, okay, now I can go through and slice and dice all this information as I need so I can fill in my algorithms and all of that kind of stuff.
Do you think that the tools as they get better are leading some companies to run programs themselves and obviating the need for the MSP? They're getting the data that they need. The tools are automated, so they need fewer people to actually do the tactical work, to analyze the data in some cases. I guess there's a true or false statement, and do you see that trend continuing or no?
I don't. I see that actually being I do see it as a trend, but I see it as a smaller subset. So consulted for a number of companies who really wanted to take the MSP in-house and run it on by themselves, what they found was that there's actually a tremendous amount of work, even with a really good VMS system. They underestimated the amount of work that an MSP does and the infrastructure behind that. So most MSPs, you might have a couple people on site, but offsite behind the scenes, you might have 500. You might have, you know, shared services and billing and accounts payable and supplier engagement and all of these things happening behind you. And then reporting is obviously a big one, because more and more, one of the biggest value props of the VMS MSP is reporting visibility. And every client wants every piece of data sliced and diced in 1,000 different ways. And no matter how good you build a reporting engine, a lot of times you didn't think of that particular thing. So then you go off and you have to build all these custom reports and things like that. So I do think that for smaller clients, I would see a trend of, hey, we'll manage it ourselves because the VMS will handle a lot of this stuff. For the large clients, I don't see that being cost effective for them, because in order to really run a truly good MSP, even internally, it requires a lot of heads. Yeah. And MSP already has those heads in place for the most part. We can spread them, a lot of them out across multiple clients. But to build that internally at a really large, you know, where you have $1 billion in spend or something like that, it's just not cost effective. It's cheaper to outsource it.
Not to mention the scale of having multiple clients and a larger overall population to look at the data, which leads me to my next question. It's a two-part question. The two hottest trends right now in our industry are the two topics that everyone's talking about. One is remote work in response to COVID, and the other one is diversity and inclusion. What's the role of the MSP as it relates to those two topics? Because a lot of the decisions are being made, quite frankly, on anecdotal information. There's a lot of stuff that's made siloed. Where can the MSP help the market at large do better across those two fronts?
Yeah, they are definitely hot topics today. So I think from an MSP perspective, for say remote working, a big piece of that is, let us help advise you. Let's truth or myth through all the information, because to your point, it's very anecdotal. And a lot of people are making decisions based on emotions or whatever the latest panic of the day is. They're not necessarily taking into account the long-term effects, the legalities, what this will do potentially for morale in certain environments. There's some companies where, like, you know, working from home is the greatest thing in the world, but there's other companies where the culture and the environment, it's all about whiteboarding and being in small, you know, in the same spaces together. And you see a real hit to morale when you start saying, sorry, you can't do that anymore. You got to be in here on a Zoom meeting. And then you get the mass, you know, I quit. Hmm. Right. Now, on the flip side of that, where you say, okay, you guys are going to work from home for a short amount of time, and then we're going to make you come back to the office. Well, now people have gotten used to being home. They don't want to go back to the office. They don't want to commute anymore. They don't want to have to put their pants on in the morning. They want to be all of that kind of stuff. So let us help you from a consulting perspective, navigate your culture, navigate the rules, you know, think the long-term and short-term. Like my company that I work for now, Agile One, we have a whole change management department that's dedicated to things like that to help with those communications and change management around those things. And from a VMS perspective, whatever that decision is, how that VMS needs to help is to be able to facilitate whatever that new process is. So, you know, whether it's you have a mobile app for time card entry or something like that, because people can't be in the office, especially if you have like light industrial or something like that, where it's harder. You don't have access to your laptop or something like that. Then the VMS can just help to facilitate those things. Yeah. So that was the remote. And then the other one was the diversity and inclusion. Is a same basic thing, is really let us help with that. Like, we have a list of diverse suppliers, but we also understand diversity and inclusion really well. We have a whole department dedicated to diversity and inclusion. So we can help you build your strategy. We can help you identify, you know, whether or not you should set a target, what those targets are, how do we help you meet those targets, all of those things. And then from a VMS, we have those abilities to track, you know, what are the types of people you're hiring? What are the types of suppliers you're engaging with? What are the types of things that you're doing to really push forward that diversity and inclusion?
Adam, you've been doing this for 20 years, give or take. So you've seen two decades worth of change and disruption, innovation. What do you think things look like 10 years from now? What's radically different, if anything?
Well, that is a million-dollar question. I've been actually, my team and I have been talking a lot about that as we look at the new products that we're building. But I think we will continue to see consolidation as more and more companies buy each other. I do think that you will start to see those ATSs, HRISs, and VMSs really become one system. So when you look at Workday bought Vindly, that's Coupa, for example, and those types of things, we're going to see more and more of that consolidation as people realize, oh, there's a whole segment of the market I'm not into because I don't have the right whatever. So I do think that that will be the same. I think one of the things, and I'm going to knock on wood, but regulatory wise, that I hope we'll see in the next 10 years is actually a relaxing of some of the rules to help facilitate people doing more business, like independent contractor compliance, for example. Right now, we're one extreme. It's very tight and strict, and there's all these rules about are you or aren't you a 1099, right? I think we're going to come more to the middle. Right? I think things like co-employment are starting to get more attention. I think we're going to see some relaxing there as well, because our economy and our culture as a country has been so impacted by COVID that we have to now rethink what is an employee? What does it mean to go to work? And if we're not able to get rid of COVID altogether and it becomes the new normal, then I think you're going to see more and more remote jobs. You're going to see more and more mixing of titles and more like, well, whatever you want to call yourself doesn't matter. Now, how the IRS is going to figure out how to get their money, it's a whole other story. But I do think that there'll be some, they'll find a way.
I'm pretty confident they'll figure that one out.
Yeah. That they're very good at. But I do think we'll see some relaxing of regulations over the next few years.
Yeah, I think we have to. I mean, across all stratospheres, there's just not enough humans to do the work right now. And if we're getting in our own way, because there's a disruptive model that allows people to do part-time or have a different classification, we need to do it, because it is that even more so than COVID will continue to hinder the economy if there's not enough people to do it.
100%. And then the technology coming out, right? So then one of the things that's a real interesting conversation I had a couple of weeks ago was, what is a lower skilled worker? Because I do think that's going to change significantly. You start to see things like robotics in the restaurant industry. You go into a number of McDonald's nowadays and they have an iPad to order on instead of a cashier. And you're going to start to see more and more of that. So now you're pushing people into more like office jobs and high tech. So what is entry-level high tech and entry-level office jobs look like? And what does that mean? So I think technology is going to facilitate a lot more things, but it's going to change the workforce as we know it too. Yeah. I think a lot of it for the better, but I think we're going to have some growing pains around that. A lot of things we have to figure out, like how do you make a restaurant employee be a remote worker when you have COVID, right? It's just, somebody on Zoom saying, hi, can I take your order? Or you could have a robot doing it. Right. Yeah. And that technology is getting better and better and better. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. So. No, indeed. And that automation movement is also happening in the office as well, too. I mean, a lot of the clerical, the traditional lower level positions are now being automated as well, too. So there's no question there's interesting times there. Adam, last question for you on a personal note. If I put you in the Wayback Machine when you first started your career, what one piece of advice would you share with that young Adam starting his career based on your experience and what you know today?
One piece of advice. I would tell my younger self to shut up and listen more.
That's easy for you to say now.
Right. I think, looking back, I had a lot of project management and technology experience under my belt before I got in the VMS, MSP staffing world. I thought I knew a lot of stuff. And then I get into this world and there's so many nuances and so many different little strange things that I think, and I was looking for the fast, oh, we can just do this, or we can just do that. And the reality was, no, you can't because there's this regulation, or no, you can't because the software can only do this, and or the client doesn't understand this. And I definitely think I could have benefited from, you know, just keep your mouth shut for like the first 2 years. just keep your mouth shut. And the other small sort of piece to that is I would have taken more classes on finance and accounts payable and things like that, because one of the most complex things we do today is invoicing. And a lot of that is done through integrations. But the first thing, one of the first areas in an implementation is, what does your invoice need to look like? And then how do we get that data and that information in the format you need it so that we get paid? But to understand, you know, POs and cost centers and project codes and tasks, and is it capitalized, is it not capitalized, OPEX, all of that, that crazy, you know, stuff that CFOs do that I'm glad I'm not a CFO for. Like you really got to understand that to really build a good invoicing process. So
good stuff. Good stuff. And I, on the shut up and listen, I have still a business card taped to my monitor that says stop talking. So whether you're starting your career or been at it for a while, that's a good one to remember for sure. Adam, listen, great to have you on the show. Before we sign off, tell our listeners where they can best contact you, or if they're interested in Agile One services.
No, absolutely. My best place is my email is A Nicholson, so A-N-I-C-H-O-L-S-O-N at agileone.com, or you can go to agileone.com and check out the website. Anytime you guys want to talk, I'm happy to talk.
Terrific. Again, thanks for coming on and sharing your insights. We appreciate it. For our listeners, as always, keep the faith, keep grinding, keep safe, and we will see you next time on Hiring You. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, John.